First of all, explain to us, if you will, the appeal for you in standing in a general election. What made you want to put your name forward?
Well, because I feel for many years, many of our politicians have let us down with many of the decisions that they make. I don't believe a lot of them have truly represented the people of this country. They often say they're listening, but then don't really seem to be listening. Like, for instance, with the Labour Party, they say they understand people's concerns on immigration, yet they don't offer up any actual solutions. They just say they're listening. So I don't know really why specifically as I want to stand. I've just always been the sort of person who, when I see something I don't like, I like to try and make it better myself. So I've been a member of UKIP Stockport for quite a long time. I've been the branch secretary, and I just saw the opportunity and thought I'd help out and stand so the people of Denton and Reddish have someone to vote for.
So you said that a lot of the politicians say that they're going to do something for people and then don't do it. What makes you different? What makes you think that if you're sat in the House of Commons as the MP, you'll be able to make that difference?
Well, because we in UKIP don't have a party whip. So what happens with a lot of other parties is basically you're whipped into obeying the party line, and if you don't, certain opportunities in the future would be withdrew from you and you'll be threatened with deselection. Now in UKIP we don't have that. We basically get all our parliamentary candidates and officials to agree just in general because we agree on the ideology and what we stand for. So because I'm not whipped by any party whip, I'm free to make my own decisions and come to conclusions on my own. So I've got no one basically lurking over me telling me what I have to do. The only people who I'd be answerable to is the people who would elect me.
But if you are in that House of Commons, and forgive me if this sounds a bit harsh, if you're a UKIP Member of Parliament, there's not going to be a lot of you if predictions and polls are coming out are to be believed. So you'll pretty much be almost a single voice among 650-odd MPs. It's going to be quite tough and quite difficult for you to get anything done, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily. We managed to push David Cameron to have a referendum and changed what I would argue the political agenda in this country with no MPs. So I don't believe, even if we were a small band of people in the House of Commons, we'd have much trouble getting our agenda across. Seems that what I'd argue, a lot of political parties seem to be scared of us and seem to like to adopt our policies. We've seen the Conservatives adopting many UKIP policies such as grammar schools and saying they'll control immigration. I doubt they will. Labour Party's even saying they're going to abolish hospital car parking charges. That's a UKIP policy as well. So, no, I don't believe it would be too difficult to hold the government to account on various issues, even if we are a small group of individuals in the Houses of Commons.
How confident are you that UKIP are going to be able to make, as a whole across, we'll move on to Denton and Reddish in a second, but across the country, how confident are you that UKIP are going to be able to make an impression politically in this general election?
I'm pretty confident. It's looking good in Thurrock, where we've got Tim Aker. He's basically been quite a prominent figure in Essex for quite a while, and especially around Thurrock. Clacton's looking good as well, where the former UKIP MP Douglas Carswell was standing, and Boston and Skegness, where Paul Nuttall's standing as well. We've got a lot of activity going on in those areas, so I'm very confident that we can definitely win seats in those areas and build from there.
One of the things that's levelled against the UKIP party at the moment is the fact that, yes, we have voted for Brexit and we are going to leave the European Union. What does that leave the party to stand for? That was your main focus, and it's gone now.
Well, what I'd argue is we haven't left the European Union yet. And when people voted, I would argue they voted to control immigration, to cut foreign aid, to ensure we're not under the jurisdiction of the European Court of Human Rights anymore, and to ensure we're not paying a massive divorce bill to Brussels. Now, at the moment, before Parliament was dissolved, Theresa May had around 50 or so Eurosceptic Tories who would drop support for her if she backslid at all on Brexit. Now, if she does win a large majority, which I'd argue that she's gonna, what will happen is she'll have no incentive to deliver a proper Brexit, and I think she'll start to backslide on various issues, such as agreeing to pay a huge divorce bill of over 100 billion, even though we've been net contributors to the EU for many years. She's already stated that in the manifesto that they're going to continue to be a part of the European Court of Human Rights, will fall under the jurisdiction of it. They've claimed they'll control immigration to the tens of thousands, but I don't believe for a second that they will, based on the track record. So I'd say we're the only party who have truly stood for the things that we've stated for many years, such as leaving the European Union and controlling immigration. And at the moment, I don't believe that Theresa May will deliver on those things. So that's one of the points. But then secondly, we're the only party who's calling for a cut in foreign aid from 0.7% of GDP to 0.2%. We're the only party standing to abolish the House of Lords and replace it with an English Parliament. So, no, I think we're plenty relevant, even though we are leaving the European Union, but not quite left yet.
On the immigration front, this is something that is often, I suppose, a stick that's used to beat UKIP with, yeah. Given the history and the controversy and things that have gone on in the party in the past. Just to kind of confront that issue with people saying UKIP is an anti-immigration party, is that the case?
Well, we're not anti anyone who comes over to this country. We're not anti-immigrant. We're anti-government policy. Because from 1950 to 1997, the net average migration was about 30,000 people a year. It worked very well. And then what we saw when the Blair government got in, it shot up very drastically to now where it's running at over 250,000 people. And that's just not sustainable. It puts incredible pressure on public services, on houses, on school places, on hospital beds. It makes a massive impact on the country as a whole. And the problem is Parliament doesn't set the amount of people who's coming to this country each year. They effectively just wait to see who turns up. But then the problem with that is you can't provide the provisions for public services that you need because you don't know who's going to come into the country. So they're always having to provide the provisions we needed the year before. So we don't have a problem with people who want to come to another country and better their lives. What the problem we have is with government policy because we believe it's unsustainable. For instance, we have to build over 100,000 homes a year just to keep up with current net migration. It's literally unsustainable. So what we want to see is we're more than happy for migration to continue with this country. We just want a fair and balanced system that keeps it at sustainable levels, which we argue is net about 30,000 a year because that falls into the historical context of this country.
How would that work itself out? Would it be something similar to a points-based system Australia?
Yeah, so we'd set up a migration control commission whose job it would be to basically oversee migration and keep it within like historical lines. We'd implement an Australian-style points system, so basically when it comes to skilled workers, you'll be like they do in Australia, they'll assign you points and that'll decide who gets in the country. We'll change the way work visas work and so basically, it's just we'll set the Migration Control Commission. That will help us to keep the numbers within historical limits. And then by setting up the Australian-style point system, we'll, again, be able to control who it is who's coming in and out of this country each year. But again, ultimately, it'll be set by Parliament because with EU migration, you don't have any control over it, whereas the immigration outside of Europe that we do control, no government seems to want to control it. They just seem to let it run as high as EU migration. So with a UKIP government, we'd obviously be able to control the migration. Parliament would decide how many people it is based on the economic need we want to come to the country this year. And then the Migration Control Commission's job would be to implement that. And we'd obviously use the Australian-style point system to decide which particular individuals get in and which don't.
Do you not feel that that might have a detrimental effect of the industries that maybe don't fall in the skilled categories, for example, your hospitality industries, your leisure industries, that rely an awful lot on the workers who come, especially from Central and Eastern Europe, over here to work in those areas?
No, I don't, because currently there's 1.5 million unemployed people in this country who I believe have the capabilities of filling those job roles. For instance, a lot of people make the argument that all the fruit will rot in the fields if we don't have people coming over from Eastern Europe to pick the fruit. Well, that's ridiculous because these individuals weren't coming prior to 2004. So the logic there is all the fruit used to rot in the fields, but they didn't because British people won't pick fruit in a field for £2 an hour. That's correct, but they will do it for minimum wage. Why wouldn't they? In my day job, I work in an office job. I'd much rather work in the outside in the nice fresh air than sat behind a desk all day. So no, I don't think it will. I think what will happen is it'll force employers to rely on British labour instead of cheap foreign labour, which they do now.
How can it be cheap foreign, forgive me for this one, but how can it be cheap foreign labour if someone who's working in this country has to be paid the minimum wage?
Well, yeah, they do, but often what you find is a lot of these employers underpay people, so they'll exploit the fact that a lot of people have come overseas, especially in the agricultural industry, and they won't pay them the minimum wage. So we'd argue that A, you should be enforcing the minimum wage so everyone gets a fair wage, but then by making sure we control our borders, we can use the British people to fulfil those roles. Because as I said, there's 1.5 million unemployed people in this country who are more than capable of working in the hospitality industry. We used to do it prior to 1997 when immigration ran at about 30,000 a year. So,
in fairness though, the hospitality industry wasn't as big in 97 as it is now, some 20 years later.
Well, again, I'm confident that we can use the 1.5 million people in this country who are currently unemployed to fill those gaps.
Moving on to what the people are talking to you about when you go around Denton and Reddish, what are the hot topics on the doorstep that they're concerned about in their constituency?
Yeah. Well, a big one is Brexit. Obviously, seeing Brexit delivered, a lot of people are worried that Theresa May may backslide on it, because as I said, there's... Now that she's potentially going to win a large majority, she potentially start to backslide on Brexit because she doesn't have a small majority anymore, and it's not as likely that people can withdraw support from her. Immigration's obviously a big one on the doorstep. That's always a big issue. People want to see the numbers reduced. A lot of people are sick of the House of Lords, as I've mentioned. Like, they think it's largely undemocratic and very unaccountable. And a lot of people are worried about the Greater Manchester Spatial Framework. I'm sure you've heard of that. So basically what it amounts to is that a lot of greenbelt land is being earmarked for development. Now, a lot of people aren't very happy about that, because the council say, well, we need homes because we're having a housing crisis. But we've not got a housing crisis. We've got a crisis with affordable homes. And the majority of homes that are being built on this greenbelt land aren't affordable homes. They're executive homes. So a lot of people want to see that greenbelt land protected and ensure that, well, I would argue that we start building on brownfield sites. Because another thing that we've seen in this Greater Manchester Spatial Framework is a lot of the homes that have been identified as brownfield sites aren't actually brownfield land at all. There was a freedom information request done, and it was found that a lot of those sites are actually open space, land that's never been built on before. So a big thing that comes up again is just protecting the greenbelt and helping relieve the housing crisis. I'd argue, A, by reducing net migration, but also by incentivising the use of brownfield land. And there's various ways we could do that. We can set up a brownfield register, because there's allegedly over 2.5 million homes we can build in brownfield land. And if we have a register, that would mean it would make it easier for councils to identify the land that they can use. We can give grants of up to £10,000 for developers to help clean up the land. And we can also exempt those homes from the first sale from stamp duty up to the 2,500 threshold. So, but yeah, it's mainly homes, immigration and Brexit that seems to come up a lot.
On the homes issue, I take your point about its executive homes are earmarked for greenbelt land. Do you, in your opinion then, do you feel that it's just the developers wanting to make... It might sound like a flippant phrase, but the developers are just wanting to make a quick buck.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is, obviously, you can sell higher cost homes for more money and make a bigger profit off it. But one of the things that we see now as well is it used to be that local authorities would tell developers where they can build. And now it seems to be the opposite. Developers seem just to take local authorities to court, get permission to build, and then build away against the expressed wish of the people and the local authority. So one of the things that we propose is local people should be able to hold referendums on big developments such as supermarkets or housing developments. And if they win the referendum, then that's legally binding and they can't build on that land anymore. So, but why they want to do it, I'm just sure it's just because they can make more money from building on that land than they could building affordable homes.
If you hold referendums for supermarket decisions and things like that, people are going to be going to the polls every week, aren't they?
Well, no, not necessarily, because A, you've got to get, I think it's over a 5% threshold, so it's not like anyone could just start one and have a referendum every week. But again, I think it's important, because what we've seen with this Greater Manchester Spatial Framework is a lot of people are not happy about this greenbelt land being built on, and these referendums will give people the opportunity to directly say to the local authority and the housing developers that no, we don't want these homes being built in this location, or we don't want this large-scale development, which I think is right, because it's ultimately their community that they've got to live in, so it should ultimately be their decision to make.
Are we having a debate now across Greater Manchester about something that is going to happen anyway? We are going to run out, even if we build on brownfield land, we are going to run out of brownfield land at some point, and we're going to have to start building on the green belts, because that's all that will be left.
Well, no, not necessarily, because contrary to popular belief, populations don't just increase. They tend to plateau, they tend to find a middle ground. Now, there's two things that can cause those populations to drastically increase. One is a sudden change in circumstances. So after the war, there was a massive baby boom because obviously the war wasn't going on anymore. And the other one is large-scale migration. Now, as I said before, when historically the net migration was 30,000 a year, and now it's running at over 250,000, that's going to put incredible pressure on the need for homes. As I said previously as well, we need to build up to 100,000 homes a year just to meet the demand of migration. So at the current rate, obviously, yeah, it's going to carry on till we've concreted over the whole country. But if we reduce migration back to a sustainable level, then no, it won't. What will happen is we can build on the 2.5 million homes on the brownfield land, and that will fulfill the home ownership need in this country. Because again, populations don't just keep on escalating and escalating. It's the tend to plateau. It's either large-scale immigration or a sudden change in circumstances, such as, well, the introduction of things like better healthcare or greater standards of living tends to boost populations up. But at the moment, we're not really experiencing any of that. The main thing we're experiencing is the large-scale migration. So again, by controlling that, that will reduce the need for homes and will reduce the need for us to build so many homes. Because we can't concrete over the whole land. Like, we need to keep green spaces, because obviously, I'm sure if I look over the hills over here, there's lovely green views, and I want my children and grandchildren to be able to enjoy those things in the same way that we are now.
So in terms of the housing crisis then, from what you're saying, controlling immigration is the golden egg in essence.
Well, pretty much, yeah, because it makes a massive difference in many things. When again, when historically you've had about 30,000 net coming to this country a year, and now we've got over 250,000, that's going to make a massive impact on, again, homes, hospital places, school places, roads, infrastructure. It matters with a lot of things. So yeah, I would say it does play a big role in it.
Last few questions, yeah. For you. This is a very, I wouldn't necessarily call it a very safe Labour seat, because if the polls are to be believed, there aren't going to be very many of those when people go to the go to vote on the 8th of June. But you've got quite a task on your hands to get rid of the current or the former standing MP, haven't you?
Well, what we've noticed, though, is before Andrew Gwynne took over, the Labour percent was about 64%, and then when Andrew took over, it dropped to about 55%. Then at the last election, it dropped again to about 50%. So his majority is decreasing. Now, yes, it is a very safe Labour seat, so I'm not going to lie to you, it's no easy task to win, but I am very confident that we can get a good solid second and build on that for the next general election and hopefully eventually knock Labour out of the position.
What's your reaction to the claim that people are making now that a vote for UKIP is a vote for the Conservative Party?
How do you mean?
What many people are suggesting is that Labour voters can't bring themselves to vote for the Conservatives, so they'll vote for UKIP as almost a protest vote against the current leadership that you have at the Labour Party.
Well, no, I don't really agree. I think if you vote UKIP, you'll get UKIP. I think if enough people believe in something and go out and vote for it, that's what you'll get. If the majority of Labour people in Denton and Reddish believe that a UKIP MP would benefit them more than a Labour MP, then I'd implore them all to go out and vote for it, because that's what you'll get.
Are you concerned at all with the fact that at the last local elections that we had just a few weeks ago, the UKIP vote, in essence, collapsed?
Well, no, because what we have to remember is the majority of those seats were won in 2013 when David Cameron was in power and there was no promise of a referendum. So the majority of those seats were very strong Tory seats who came over to UKIP. So now we've got Theresa May masquerading as a Brexiteer, it seems logical that obviously a lot of the support probably will go back to the Conservatives. But A, I'm confident that Theresa May won't deliver a proper Brexit and that support will come back. But also, we did win one seat, and that was in a Labour area, which goes to show the point we've been making for a while that UKIP is set to replace the Labour Party. So it's disappointing. I would have liked it if we would have held on to more of those seats, but we expected it because, as I say again, a lot of those seats came from before the referendum was announced, and it was a lot of Tory people who weren't happy with the Conservative government. So I think as time goes on, Theresa May will backslide on Brexit and that support will come back.
I'm not around with you when you go out campaigning, so I can't judge this. I'll just take your word for it. What sort of reaction has there been when you've knocked on people's doors, when you've met them in the street, when you say, I am the UKIP candidate, is it generally positive or has there been some negative in there as well?
Obviously, you always get individuals who aren't going to support you. But no, we've had very good reactions. A lot of people seem quite enthusiastic because a lot of the people who voted UKIP are people who've never voted for any party in their life. And the reason they never voted for those other parties is because they didn't feel that they represented them. And I would argue nothing's changed in that front. So a lot of those people are still very loyal to UKIP. So I've noticed the reaction's very good, especially since a manifesto was launched yesterday. A lot of people, I've heard from a lot of people, have been saying that they were thinking of voting Conservative, but now they're going to vote UKIP based on what they saw at the manifesto. So, yeah, I think we're getting a good reaction.
If you win the vote and you become the MP for Denton and Reddish, what's the one thing, the first thing that you're going to go to Parliament with to help and to assist the members of your constituency that voted you in?
There's quite a few things. Obviously, making sure proper Brexit's delivered and net migration is controlled. But another big thing for me is crime. The way, sadly, across the country and across Stockport and Tameside, crime statistics are going up. It's on the rise. Now, I would argue a lot of the reason for that is I've seen many people when I was growing up who would break into somebody's home, violently beat someone on a night out, steal someone's car, and they get given a warning. Now, the problem with that is if you're that young person who's given that warning, you're directly incentivized to continue committing crime because you'll think, well, I didn't really get in much trouble. Why not carry on? Now, what I would argue is we need to go back to strong sentencing. So if somebody breaks into somebody's home, if somebody commits a violent offence against someone, they should be in prison for that crime, because not only does that deter other people from committing those crimes again in the future, but it deters that person from becoming a violent criminal. Because the problem we have now is it's only after you've committed about 5, 6, 7 crimes that you'll actually get sent to prison. But the problem then is you're a hardened criminal, so it's pretty much impossible to reform. So I would push for reform in the way we sentence people to prison and the way we deal with crime in this country, because I frankly think we're being too lax.
It puts an awful lot of pressure on an already under pressure prison system
There's about 13,000 individuals who are foreign nationals who could be deported back to their countries who've committed crime in this country. That would free up a lot of prison spaces. We're arguing for about 7,000 new prison guards, so that will again help alleviate the strain. And the Conservatives are trying to reduce the number of prison places and close prisons. We don't believe that's right. We can't be slack on crime, because again, all that happens is you incentivize people to continue down a path of criminality. Because if the consequences you're getting for committing a crime are very small, you're just going to carry on committing those crimes. So it's important that you have strong deterrents from people becoming criminals.
Final question. You're out there on the campaign trail on a beautiful day as it is today as we do this interview. Enjoying it?
Yeah, it's great. It's going really well. We're getting good responses. We're getting out there, delivering lots of leaflets, speaking to lots of people, doing lots of interviews with people like yourself. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's really good.